The following is an Audio Renaissance presentation.
Hello, I'm Bill Hartley, president of Audio Renaissance, and I'm very pleased to present to you our adaptation of The Book by Alan Watts. It's a brilliant synthesis of the teaching of this beloved 20th century philosopher. And at different points throughout the tape, you'll actually get a chance to hear the voice of the late Alan Watts himself, recorded live, on location, during lectures and seminars. And now, The Book, read by Ralph Blum.
Inside information. Just what should a young man or woman know in order to be in the know? Is there, in other words, some inside information, some special taboo, some real lowdown on life and existence that most parents and teachers either don't know or won't tell? In Japan, it was once customary to give young people about to be married a pillow book. This was a small volume of woodblock prints, often colored, showing all the details of sexual intercourse. It wasn't just that, as the Chinese say, one picture is worth 10,000 words. It was also that it spared parents the embarrassment of explaining these intimate matters face to face. But today, in the West, you can get such information at any newsstand. Sex is no longer a serious taboo. Teenagers sometimes know more about it than adults. But if sex is no longer the big taboo, what is? For there is always something taboo, something repressed, unadmitted, or just glimpsed quickly out of the corner of one's eye because a direct look is too unsettling. Taboos lie within taboos like the skins of an onion. What then would be the book which fathers might slip to their sons and mothers to their daughters without ever admitting it openly? Surely the book I have in mind wouldn't be the Bible, the good book, that fascinating anthology of ancient wisdom, history, and fable. It's been treated as a sacred cow for so long that it might well be locked up for a century or two so that people could hear it again with clean ears. The book I am thinking about would not be religious in the usual sense, but it would have to discuss many things with which religions have been concerned. The universe and our place in it, the mysterious center of experience, which I call I Myself, the problems of life and love, pain and death, and the whole question of whether existence has meaning in any sense. It might seem, then, that our need is for some genius to invent a new religion, a philosophy of life, and a view of the world that is plausible and generally acceptable for the late 20th century, and through which all people can feel that the world as a whole, and their own lives in particular, have meaning. But this, as history has shown repeatedly, is not enough. Religions are divisive and quarrelsome. We do not need a new religion or a new Bible. We need a new experience, a new feeling of what it is to be I. The lowdown on life, which is, of course, the secret and profound view, is that our normal sensation of self is a hoax, or at best, a temporary role that we are playing, or have been conned into playing, with our own tacit consent, just as every hypnotized person is basically willing to be hypnotized. The most strongly enforced of all known taboos is the taboo against knowing who or what you really are behind the mask of your apparently separate, independent, and isolated ego. The sensation of I as a lonely and isolated center of being is so powerful and so commonsensical and so fundamental to our modes of speech and thought, to our laws and social institutions, that we cannot experience selfhood except as something superficial in the scheme of the universe. We are forced, therefore, to speak of it through myth, that is, through special metaphors, analogies, and images, which say what it is like as distinct from what it is. Myth, then, is the form in which I try to answer when children ask me those fundamental metaphysical questions which come so readily to their minds. Where did the world come from? Why did God make the world? Where was I before I was born? Where do people go when they die? Again and again, I have found that they seem to be satisfied with a simple and very ancient story which goes something like this. There was never a time when the world began, because it goes round and round like a circle, and there's no place where a circle begins. Look at my watch, which tells the time. It goes round and so the world repeats itself again and again. But just as the hour hand of the watch goes up to 12 and down to 6, so too there is day and night, waking and sleeping, living and dying, winter and summer. You can't have any one of these without the other, because you wouldn't be able to know what black is unless you had seen it side by side with white, or white unless side by side with black. In the same way, there are times when the world is and times when it isn't. For if the world went on and on without rest forever and ever, it would get horribly tired of itself. So it comes and it goes. Now you see it, now you don't. Because it doesn't get tired of itself, it always comes back again after it disappears. It's like your breath. It goes in and out. And if you try to hold it in all the time, you feel terrible. It's also like the game of hide and seek, because it's always fun to find new ways of hiding and to seek for someone who doesn't always hide in the same place. God also likes to play hide and seek, but because there is nothing outside God, he has no one to play with but himself. He gets over this difficulty by pretending that he is not himself. That is his way of hiding from himself. God pretends that he is you and I and all the people in the world, all the animals, all the plants, all the rocks, and all the stars. In this way, he has strange and wonderful adventures, some of which are terrible and frightening. But these are just like bad dreams, for when he wakes up, they will disappear. Now, when God plays hide and pretends that he is you and I, he does it so well that it takes him a long time to remember where and how he hid himself. But that's the whole fun of it, just what he wanted to do. He doesn't want to find himself too quickly, for that would spoil the game. That is why it is so difficult for you and me to find out that we are God in disguise, pretending not to be himself. But when the game has gone on long enough, all of us will wake up, stop pretending, and remember that we are all one single self, the God who is all that there is and who lives forever and ever. Of course, you must remember that God isn't shaped like a person. People have skins, and there is always something outside our skins. If there weren't, we wouldn't know the difference between what is inside and outside our bodies. But God has no skin and no shape, because there isn't any outside to him. The inside and the outside of God are the same. And though I have been talking about God as he and not she, God isn't a man or a woman. I didn't say it, because we usually say it for things that aren't alive. God is the self of the world, but you can't see God for the same reason that without a mirror, you can't see your own eyes, and you certainly can't bite your own teeth or look inside your own head. Yourself is that cleverly hidden because it is God in hiding. You may ask why God sometimes hides in the form of horrible people or pretends to be people who suffer from great disease and pain. Remember first that he isn't really doing this to anyone but himself. Remember, too, that in almost all the stories you enjoy, there have to be bad people as well as good people. For the thrill of the tale is to find out how the good people will get the better of the bad. It's the same as when we play cards. At the beginning of the game, we shuffle them all into a mess, which is like the bad things in the world. But the point of the game is to put the mess into good order. And the one who does it best is the winner. Then we shuffle the cards once more and play again. And so it goes with the world. This story, obviously mythical in form, is not given as a scientific description of the way things are. Based on the analogies of games and the drama, and using that worn-out word God for the player, the story claims only to be like the way things are. Any student of religions will know that this story comes from ancient India, and is the mythical way of explaining the Vedanta philosophy. Vedanta is the teaching of the Upanishads, a collection of dialogues, stories, and poems, some of which go back at least to 800 BC.
It's saying that the self in each one of you is really at root one. Just in the same way that you have all over your body millions of nerve ends. Each one of those nerve ends is, as it were, a little eye, because all the senses are fundamentally one sense. Now imagine then every little nerve end is a little eye. And it gets its impression of the world, but it sends it all back into the central brain. Well, in a somewhat similar way, every person, every animal, every what the Hindus call sentient being, all those forms that we see may be looked upon as the eyes that look out of one central self. But going yet deeper, we find that it's somehow a necessity of thought that there be some sort of a something which is the common ground of all these universes, all these galaxies. And that ground is the self, as Hindus understand it, the Atman. Now that's quite a startling point of view. Because what it's saying is, you see, that you are basically the works.
But the self of the world, as taught in Vedanta, must not be confused with our usual ideas of selfishness or the practice of unselfishness, the effort to identify with others and their needs. Such unselfishness is apt to be a highly refined egotism, comparable to the in-group which plays the game of we're more tolerant than you. If, then, I am not saying that you ought to awaken from the ego illusion and help save the world from disaster, why the book? Why not sit back and let things take their course? Simply that it is a part of things taking their course that I write. As a human being, it is just my nature to enjoy and share philosophy. I do this the same way that some birds are eagles and some are doves, some flowers lilies and some are roses. I realize, too, that the less I preach, the more likely I am to be heard.